Great to have you with us here on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. We're going to take a look at genealogy, your genealogy maybe, to begin the show. Genealogy research, it involves combining or combing through birth records, census data, and you can find a lot of fascinating information and personal history in those old records. And our guest today, they can probably tell you everything you ever needed to know about genealogy. Two guests today from the Wisconsin Historical Society. One of them, Rebecca Hopman, is the genealogy services librarian. Rebecca, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Great to have you here. And Jill Fuller is the reference librarian and the stacks manager at the Wisconsin Historical Society Library. And Jill, thank you for joining in.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And I hope you'll join in with your questions as you listen along. Do you want to know where to start researching your family history, or do you need some help finding a particular document, perhaps, that would solve a family mystery? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Well, the two of you are relatively new to leading the genealogy collection for the Wisconsin Historical Society Library and Archives. Rebecca, there's a couple of records that you've got to go through. How do you familiarize yourself, or did you familiarize yourself with the records available? What are they? 3 million maybe records?
Oh, well, more than 3 million. We've got just about 3 million pre-1907 birth, marriage, and death records at the Historical Society. Oh. So that's just a tiny portion of the whole collection. Mm-hmm. It's overwhelming how much we have. We have a pretty incredible collection at the Historical Society.
Yeah, and how'd you go about familiarizing yourself with it?
Sure. So, you know what? My favorite way of familiarizing myself with any library collection is by answering people's questions.
Yeah.
So we get all sorts of questions in the library from students and faculty, of course, many community members, many, many genealogists. And so they have really helped me these past few months. Looking at the genealogy books we have an incredible North American history collection. So we specialize in U.S. and Canadian records and history. And it's really through the patrons that I've become familiar with the collection.
Jill, I'm going to turn to you for a minute. How accessible are these records to people wanting to trace their family trees?
That's a great question. So we do have a lot of collections that are online and available on our website that people can find. We've digitized local and county history books from Wisconsin. We have maps and atlases of a variety of types that are available on our website at wisconsinhistory.org. But then there's a lot more that's not digitized and that it's just available at our library. We have newspapers that are on microfilm. We have history books for so many topics in North American and Canadian history. We have government documents that are there. We have records in our archives, naturalization papers and probate records. But we do try to make those as accessible to people as possible. So that's where your reference librarians and your archivists come in. So you can contact us and we make those as accessible to you as possible through helping you locate those records. We help guide you to what might be the best records for you for the question that you have to solve that family history mystery that you have. But also, we can help scan those records for you and send them to you depending on what it is you're looking for. Or we're there every day except Sundays. So if you want to come and look at them. And then also there's records actually at area research centers all over the state. So not just at our building in Madison, but we have archival records all over the state. So we try to make that as accessible to you as possible.
And I think it's pretty cool that your reputation, Wisconsin Historical Society records are reputed to be among the very best anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we like to say one of the top five collections in the United States. It's pretty incredible that we have such a resource in Wisconsin.
Yeah, it sure is. Andrea in Madison has a question about Something that you, I think, both have mentioned in passing. Andrea, what's on your mind?
Well, I'm interested in doing the genealogy, but while I was beginning to do that process for myself, my situation is that I had a step-parent adoption when I was 7 years old. I lost my mother when I was five, and then my father remarried, and there was a step-parent adoption later on. And it never really occurred to me about the records, but I realized when I went to get records that the step-parent's name is on my official birth certificate, which I guess is normal, of course. But the point is that there's now no record of who my real mother was in the genealogical record, because my official birth certificate with the state reflects my step-parent. So my mother's name has been completely wiped out. What do you do to really...
to find more about your mother is really what you're asking, Andrea.
How do I document that my mother was really my mother?
Oh, okay.
I did contact the state that this occurred in, and I said, can't you put a stamp on the adoption certificate that says, please refer to record XYZ, which would then refer people back to my original birth certificate within the registry, of course? And they said, oh, no, that's a legislator thing. We can't do that. This is the way this is handled, and that's the way it is. Well, you know, my mother's been erased.
Yeah. Okay. Joe, let me turn to you first.
Sure. Yeah. So there's a couple of ideas on this that I have. One is with specific questions like this, we always say, go ahead and send us an email at asklibrary@wisconsinhistory.org. We can help you more in depth and give you some links and other resources that might help you. If this was in Wisconsin, there is the Wisconsin Adoption Search Program website. I'm not sure if you went through that, but that might be something that you can try, because I'm not sure exactly which record you have or if there's other existing records. But also DNA is another possibility if you do want to try to find connections to a birth family. That is something that some people do. While that's not a paper documentation, paper records, that is an option for people who have kind of hit a brick wall with other documentation for adoption. So, there is that avenue as well, if you've considered that. But if you do want to send us an email, that's we can work with you more one-on-one and kind of go over what you have done, the research you have done, the records you have tried to find, and then give you maybe some more other possibilities.
It sounds like Andrea wants to know, wants a way of somehow identifying on the certificate that her mother, her real mother, is listed.
Mm-hmm. So that is an interesting question, Andrea. It really depends state by state. I think you may have mentioned that it wasn't in Wisconsin.
Was it in Wisconsin, Andrea?
No, it was in Minnesota.
Okay. So you might want to reach out to the Minnesota Historical Society as well. They may be able to give you some guidance. It depends. With adoption, that can be a little tricky in changing the official record. So I'm not sure if you can change the record in this case, but what I would encourage you to do is to document your family tree and document your birth mother on that family tree. If you write a book about your family history, if you put your family tree up online somewhere. So that way, even though the official record may never have her name on it, depending on, again, state regulation, there will be your work out there showing that, you know, she is your mother and she, you know, has this very important place in your family tree. So even if you can't get the official record changed, it never hurts to put your own research out there and make sure your family and other people are aware of the work that you've done to document her story.
All right. Andrea, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. You can join in, too. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. That was a little different kind of research, that a question there from Andrea. What are some of the more common record requests you receive from people doing genealogical research? And Rebecca, I'll start with you.
Sure. Well, I think one of the collections that is most frequently used is our vital records collection, because we do have Wisconsin birth, marriage, and death records that were created in the state before October 1st, 1907. And those are records that are mostly only available in our reading room. And so those are one of the more unique type of records that people come to us for. We also have people request Civil War muster rolls for Wisconsin ancestors who served. Or we have the special non-population census records. So if your family member was in business or owned a farm in Wisconsin in the mid to late 1800s, and there's some other schedules as well, but we have a lot of more specialized information about those kind of people that we can access.
Yeah. And Jill, I would imagine that people come to you sometimes feeling a bit overwhelmed and even to hardly know where to start their searches for information about their families. What do you tell them?
Yeah, that is the case. So the first thing that we always recommend is to start with what you have at home. Start with your family records, the paperwork that you already have, the vital records maybe that you have at home. Talk to your family, get the stories from your family members, and use that as kind of the foundation for your research. And then from there, start working backwards from yourself. Sometimes we want to start with the stories that we've heard about our great-great grandparents and kind of try to prove some things, but really what works best is starting with yourself and then working backwards and filling in all of those gaps and allowing that family tree to really unfold as you go backwards in the generations. And then you're able to really follow that evidence, follow that trail backwards and to see what comes from it. You never know what you're going to find as you go. So that's really the steps and the suggestions that we start with when someone is starting out on their genealogy.
I was thinking back to my sister at one point, sat down with a 90-year-old grandmother and 80-some-year-old aunt and recorded a long conversation with both of them about the history of the family and their weddings and the names of people and so forth. And that kind of thing is, well, it's really fun to be able to pull that out and listen to Grandma Berryman talking about having to make her own wedding dress and do all of her cooking for her wedding and so forth. But it also provides a little bit of information about what's going on in the family.
Sure. I think oral history is such an important tool. You know, when you're talking to family members, if you record their voices or even video recording, to have their presence still available, their voice, their face. But also, even though, you know, you always want to back up as much as you can family stories with data or with records.
Sure.
Those kind of wonderful stories that get lost when those people are no longer around, you know, they're so important to record while you still can. So we always encourage people as a first step, as Jill said, to sit down with your older family members or all your family members and record those personal stories.
Chris in Madison will give you a chance to join in. Hi, Chris.
Hi. So your previous caller, did she say that she wanted to know the name of her mother, just have it recorded on the birth certificate?
I think she just wanted it recorded on the birth certificate.
So she knew the name of the woman?
Yes.
Okay, because I was going to say if she did not, you know, if she was adopted at 5 years old, she could have gone back to the marriage record of that parent and found the name there probably.
Yeah. And both Jill and Rebecca are nodding yes in agreement for that, which makes a lot of sense. And other people might be in that situation, so it's certainly worth mentioning. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate the call. We are talking about your family tree today on the show, and I hope you'll join in with your questions. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at genealogy on the show and your family tree with our two guests, Rebecca Hopman and Jill Fuller, both with the Wisconsin Historical Society Library. It's great to have them with us today. The weather guys will be coming along about noon to talk climate and weather with you, but right now, What about your family tree? Give a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. Eleanor in Madison, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Sure. Hi. I just wanted to answer a question that Andrea, our previous caller, had about her birth parent.
Yes.
Something that I've gone through as well. I've gone through something similar. And you can file a petition to amend your birth certificate. So if she wanted physical documentation about her birth mother on her birth certificate, she could order a copy with her stepmother from the county she was born in and save that into her genealogy and then file a petition to update it with her birth mother's name. And she would have that paper trail.
And that's that works in Minnesota. Yeah,
I believe that does work in Minnesota. Yes.
Eleanor, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate that call. So there is Andrea. There's hope on this. You can amend your birth certificate in Minnesota. So there you go. Glad to know that. Mark in Appleton, we'll go to you next. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Larry. Hey, I've got an interesting story. My grandmother was born in 1913, and when she was in her mid-60s, she found out a family secret that the woman who she thought was her sister was really her mother, and that fact was hidden for a long time. It was hidden because we, to this day, don't know who my great-grandfather was. Through a genealogical search or through some sort of a DNA test, is it possible to find out accurately who my great-grandfather may have been?
What do you think, Rebecca?
You know, I think it's very possible. DNA, certainly, if someone with his DNA were to match with you, that would certainly be a very solid clue. With the records, it really depends. You know, if his name wasn't on the birth record or he wasn't really in the family's life for that long, it might be trickier, but, you know, it's very possible that records are out there. But again, I think DNA in this case might be a good way of proving that you are technically related to him through another descendant.
Yeah. And the whole business about DNA testing, I wondered, how has interest in genealogy been affected by DNA testing?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that it definitely has opened up possibilities that were not there before. You know, people who maybe were not interested in doing research or going into the records, it has allowed them to become involved in doing genealogy or finding out about their family in new ways. And also for people who maybe, like the previous caller, who could not find out things about their family or their heritage, can now maybe find some answers through DNA because maybe there wasn't anything in the paper trail. So DNA has opened some doors. And so people who have chosen to take that route have been able to find things out about their family and find new family members through doing the DNA testing.
And the testing itself is, I'm just wondering how trustworthy are the results of DNA testing when it comes to ancestry information?
Sure. Well, there are several different companies out there that you can take a DNA test through. So what I like to remind people is that the information that you're getting back from the test is only as accurate as the pool of information that company has. So, for example, if you take an ancestry test, they have a certain pool of people that have taken that test. So based on that collective result, they can give you an estimate that you're, say, 23% Swedish. But then more people will take the test, so that percentage might change to 37% Swedish. And some people might think, well, that's my DNA. How can it change? And your DNA itself isn't changing. It's the pool of data that Ancestry has to pull from. So sometimes people do take tests from multiple companies. They might take it from Ancestry and 23andMe and another one. It just really depends on what you're looking to do and the kind of, you know, kind of information that you're looking for.
All right. So that was Mark in Appleton, I believe. Let's go to Jim also in Appleton. Hi, Jim.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. You may have heard of the famous Brooks Brothers clothiers that are out of New York.
Yes.
I am related to that family, and the grandfather of the Brooks brothers, Dr. David Brooks, lived in the Long Island, Oyster Bay area, and he was, as a doctor, somehow appointed or recognized by the king. So we're talking about Revolutionary War era here. Is there any records of that, maybe back in England, that I could somehow get?
That is a
Rebecca,
great...
Rebecca, yeah, go ahead, Rebecca.
So you said he was appointed by the king. Can you tell me a little more about what... Was this at a position he was appointed to?
Yes, he was recognized by the king as the doctor for that area. The king in New York City had built a hospital, and supposedly this gave him rights to access the facilities at the hospital in New York.
Okay, that's really interesting. So I might reach out to the National Archives in the UK to see if there's any, if there was like a proclamation or if it was somehow included in any kind of record there. But if that hospital still exists or, you know, has been kind of absorbed into a modern day hospital in New York that still exists, you know, I'm not sure how far their records would go back, but you could always reach out to them and see, do they have the records? Are their records held by, you know, maybe the New York Historical Society, something like that? But yeah, I would also reach out to the National Archives in the UK and see if they can help you with that.
All right. And you have the name. Obviously, you have the name of the relative of the person. And so I think that would be the biggest thing.
Yeah. And you could also, I guess you could look in newspapers at the time as well and see if there's any kind of, you know, news announcement about that. I'm not quite sure. But we do have colonial papers at the Wisconsin Historical Society on microfilm, but also many of those are digitized and available on other sites as well. So you could also look in the newspapers to see what kind of coverage there would be at the time.
So as far back as the Revolutionary War?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Oh,
we do.
Jim, mm-hmm. There you go. Another opportunity for you. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. Rebecca, you've had an interesting kind of history. I know for one thing, you provided genealogy for quilters back in the day.
Yes, I did. So at my last job, I was also a genealogy librarian. I worked at Ela Area Public Library in Lake Zurich, Illinois. And one of my main goals there, as well as a goal that I have while working at the Wisconsin Historical Society, is really to expand the pool of people who are interested in their family history, people who feel like they can research their family history. So, you know, even if you don't necessarily want to go back and build your 7-generation family tree on Ancestry, there are so many ways you can still tell your family story. So there's this great quilter, Deb Lindahl, in the Chicagoland area, and she has put together this quilt called 100 Dresses, 100 Memories. And each quilt square is a dress, which includes historical fabrics that have been passed down in her family from her mother and grandmother and aunts and great aunts.
Wow, and that's pretty cool.
It is. And so each dress, she has written an essay about, you know, what that dress represents to her family story. And so we brought it to our quilting group at the library. And, you know, so things like that, I encourage people, if they're interested in cooking, think about the recipes that have been passed down in your family. If you're interested in crafting or technology or, you know, really anything, there's ways to incorporate your family story into all of your interests and skills.
And if you're interested in glass eyes, you even, I know on the little blurb about you, you have a story about customs agents finally catching the king of glass eye smugglers.
Yes. You know, as a librarian, Jill and I, you know, we come across all sorts of interesting stories. So Bruno Schultz was the, you know, New York newspaper declared king of glass eye smugglers. German eyes, you know, glass eye prosthetics were, you know, a little better quality than what you could get from American glass eye makers. And so he was smuggling them into the country because he could sell them for more. So he was avoiding those import taxes. And custom agents tracked him down. And I tracked him down by looking at genealogical records, by looking at census records and applications for passports and newspaper records. So, you know, even though he's not anything, he's not in my family tree, which I'm a little disappointed by. That would be a fun story. Mm-hmm. I still use those genealogy tools to find his story.
And Jill Fuller, you write and co-host a history podcast. It's kind of was interesting to me about Louise May Alcott.
I do, yes.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, so, just what you said. I have a podcast where I talk about Louise May Alcott's life and legacy. Many people just know her as the author of Little Women, but she actually wrote many Gothic thrillers, and she was a nurse in the Civil War, and she had just a really rich and full life. So talk about her legacy and all the things that she did.
Pretty cool. What's the name of the podcast?
It is called Let Genius Burn. You can find it anywhere, Spotify, Apple Podcasts.
Yep. Let Genius Burn.
Yeah, Let Genius Burn.
Oh, I like that. And I haven't heard it yet, so I'm going to have to take a look. I'll take a listen.
There you go.
Take a listen. Mary in Madison has a question for us. Let's go there. Hi, Mary.
Good afternoon. Good morning. This is Mary from Madison, Wisconsin. I would like to know if someone can help me find out about my mother's mother. My mother's was adopted back in about 1918, I believe, and her mother is nowhere to be found anywhere. I have been looking high and low. I do know several things about the woman. Her name was Helen Taylor Leveros. She was an actress. She lived in St. Paul, Minnesota, but I do believe that she died in Stillwater, Minnesota. What I'd like to know is where she buried, who was she really, and how did she die?
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Jill, we'll start with you.
Sure. So what I love is that you have specific research questions that you're looking for. When we get requests like this from patrons, we always are asking and narrowing down what specifically are you looking for, because that's so helpful when you're doing research. So those are some great research questions. With that kind of specific research questions, I encourage you to contact us. Again, our email address at the library is asklibrary@wisconsinhistory.org. That type of research question, we can help you look for specific records and resources that we can dig up for you, send to you to try to guide you towards those answers. There are specific records like obituaries, cemetery records, funeral home records that might actually guide you towards the answers to those. So we'll ask you some more specific questions about her, about what you know, and then from there we can try to see what we can find for you.
Mary, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. And how do people get a hold of you?
So they can call us. Our phone number for the library is right on our homepage of our website, wisconsinhistory.org. They can call and it'll go right to the reference desk. There's always a reference librarian or two sitting there ready to answer the phone and answer questions. There's also that email address, asklibrary@wisconsinhistory.org. We also have one for the archives, askarchives@wisconsinhistory.org. So those are the best ways to contact us. And mm-hmm. I see Rebecca finger up. I was about to say something, but go for it, Rebecca. You can do it.
Well, this might have been what you were going to say, but you can also come and visit us in person.
Yep.
We are open to the public. You do not have to, you know, be a UW affiliated person or have any special reason. We are free and open to the public, both the library and archives, 6 days a week, Monday mm-hmm. through Saturday. You can check our website for the specific hours, but you are welcome to come in and use any of the collections that we have. Everything is available to you. And then there are reference staff in both the library reading room and the archives reading room that can help you in person during your visit.
The other thing that I wanted to mention is that not only will we help you over email or help you if you just drop in at the desk, but Rebecca and I also do free one-on-one hour-long consultations. If you would like to sit down either in person or over Zoom and talk with us about your specific genealogy mystery that you are working on or project, you can set that up with us too. So you can, again, go on our website and email us, and we will set that up with you.
So Mary and Madison, you know, you're close. You're a couple minutes away probably from the folks if you want to do something in person as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. And thank you again for calling. Appreciate it. Dee in Madison has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Dee.
Hi. Well, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question concerns my paternal grandfather. I found him in a census record in Indiana when he was four, and nothing else that I could find about him until he was 19 and living in Iowa.
Somehow he got to Iowa. All right. So how what's the process here, Rebecca?
Yeah, so we would want to look at a variety of different records. It sounds like you've looked at the census. Now, it depends on what census years you're looking at. So, for example, the 1890 census has mostly been destroyed in a fire. So that is a big census year to keep in mind that we usually can't find records. But you might look in state censuses. For example, Wisconsin had a state census every 5 years for many years. So that kind of was a good in-between check-in for the federal when the federal census wasn't being taken. You could look at city directories, newspapers. There's all sorts of other ways of finding people than just the federal census. So again, like Jill has said, if you want to email us at asklibrary@wisconsinhistory.org with the specifics, we can certainly help you. But there are many other records aside from that federal census that can get us from age 4 to age 19, maybe.
Yeah, and all those are available at your place.
Yeah, yeah. And again, there are some records you can search online on our website at wisconsinhistory.org. There's also, you know, if you visit your local public library, they may have subscriptions that you can use to sites like ancestry.com and newspapers.com. We offer those to anyone that visits our library. So those are also some of the places that if you're not finding records on our site, for example, I think you mentioned Iowa and maybe Indiana. If we don't have, we will have directories and newspapers and other records from those states. But you might also visit your local library. A lot of local libraries have someone who can help you with genealogy. So you're welcome to reach out to us, but then also don't forget your local librarians can be very helpful with that.
Dee, there you go. Thank you for calling. William in Colfax, Willem in Colfax, your turn. Hi, Willem.
Hi. I had a question. I'm always wondering about this because I see I had some relatives and stuff who've searched, you know, for their ancestry and things like that, and they come back and they say, you know, you're this percent Irish and that percent Dutch and that percent German, and how do they, what is the difference between the DNA of a German person and like a Norwegian person? Is there really a difference? Aren't they all, you know, Nordic people or something?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, it involves understanding DNA, I guess.
Sure. You know, that's a really good question. And I can't say that I am an expert on the specifics of that kind of level of detail on DNA. But basically, I think, you know, these companies are able to provide locations for where, you know, certain specific kinds of DNA, you know, is commonly from. And so I think that's probably the difference. And, you know, actually, over time, those companies like Ancestry, 23andMe have been able to become more specific from what I understand. You know, you might have formerly just been told that you know, had Western European DNA. And now even with certain DNA, they can tell you down to like the state or county that you're from or, you know, again, different parts of different countries. And it's just over time how they've been able to refine it. So they've had, you know, a certain number of Norwegian people and a certain number of, or, you know, people with German heritage take the test so they can make those distinctions. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you're like drastically, you know, German is drastically different from Norwegian. It's just, you know, being able to locate more precisely where your ancestors came from.
Well, it's a numbers thing. You know, if you've got millions of people, if you start with thousands and then you're up to millions, you've got the data to really be able to zero in.
Exactly.
Basically, that's it.
Right. Yeah. But if you take the test, they do, at least on Ancestry, there'll be a map and they'll show you with the percentages where on the map it matches to. But like Rebecca said, it does, you know, the more people that they have taking it, the more precisely they're able to match it. So, you know, not just German, but they'll show like, you know, kind of Baltic area or, you know, something like that. So, yeah, you'll be able to see that.
Kind of a fun story we got from Bev, who emailed to say, Bev used Ancestry.com before traveling to Newport, Ireland. Bev then met with a local tourism clerk for 2 hours in Newport. Bev was offered a book on the ancestry of Newport, dated back to 1884. Bev's great-grandfather was born in Newport and emigrated to the U.S. in 1904. Bev said she learned that her great-grandfather owned a hotel and his descendants currently owned a hair salon there. And as it happens, Bev is a hairdresser and was able to walk into their relative's business to get a haircut.
Aw, that's a great story.
That's a great story. I love it. Thanks, Bev, for sending that along. Bill and Ladysmith, what's on your mind?
Well, sir, I would like to know if in the case of divorce and both parents' names are left out of the birth certificate, if the child still has the ability to get his hereditary information.
Okay. Cases of divorce.
Sure. You know, in the case of a divorce, if you're looking for example, the divorce record, in Wisconsin, we do have those at the Wisconsin Historical Society. But if you're looking more for the history of the two, you know, the couple that got divorced and their ancestry, you can certainly, as long as you still have their names and maybe their dates of death or the date of marriage or divorce, you can still take those, you know, just the few pieces of information you have and look for those records from, you know, earlier in their lives. So that's something you can still certainly pursue.
Yeah. And how does Bill do that? Do you go online to your site?
Sure. So, again, if you're the divorced couple is from Wisconsin, if they were born, married, or died there, you may be able to find records in our pre-1907 vital records collection. If you want to look for the divorce record in particular, you can email askarchives@wisconsinhistory.org. But also if you email asklibrary@wisconsinhistory.org, we can help you start to access those, the records that maybe aren't searchable on our website.
Yeah. Well, on the website, I went to the website just to take a look, and you can write in names.
Mm-hmm.
And a bit of information, whatever information you have, which gives you prompts.
Yeah, we have our vital record search, our name index search. So basically, you mentioned earlier 3 million. That's the number of those birth, marriage, and death records that we have. And you can put in, I usually recommend putting in like just the last name or the first name, whatever's a little more unusual. And that will pull up all of those records that we have matching that name. So if you know, you know, if you're looking for a birth record and you know your ancestor was born in 1890 in Dane County, you can narrow down to see if that birth record is there. But you might also find that there's a newspaper clipping or a marriage record that we have in those search results as well.
I was kind of struck because the example online is Miller, which my name is Miller, M-E-I-L-L-E-R, and you were giving all different kinds of options to Miller, but Miller didn't show up.
Sorry about that. We'll work on that.
I chuckled to myself when I saw that. Bill, there you go. Thank you for again for calling. Susan, we'll get to you in just a minute in Minneapolis. Just a reminder, our guests today, Rebecca Hopman and Jill Fuller, from the Genealogy Services at the Wisconsin Historical Society Library. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. taking a look at genealogy on the program today. Great to have our two guests, Rebecca Hopman and Jill Fuller from the Wisconsin Historical Society Library. Just a quick mention, tomorrow on the show, we'll talk about dog trading with Patricia McConnell, and then we'll look at cat care with Angie Ruppel. So that's tomorrow. But right now, it's your family history, and Susan in Minneapolis, Minnesota, has a question for us. Let's go there. Hi, Susan.
Hi. Actually, I have three questions about the DNA mail-in services. The first one is, I've heard that 23andMe is in financial trouble, and I have a box kit sitting on my desk from them as well as from Ancestry. Should I rush getting that in because they might go out of business?
Well, who knows?
Yeah, that I wouldn't be able to speak to that. I'm not sure on the future of 23andMe, but I mean, certainly if you already have the kit and you want to go ahead and do it, then I wouldn't hesitate.
Yeah.
Okay, and then my second question is, I know somebody who is curious about his heritage. He's adopted, but most of the popular kits say that they also give you information about your odds of certain medical conditions, and his position is he does not want to know if they're going to tell him that he has a predisposition toward something
bad,
fatal or horrific.
Yeah.
Which one should he go to that won't tell him anything awful medically?
So 23andMe is from what my understanding, that one tends to be more geared towards medical health and history. So he may want to look into the Ancestry test. Again, any DNA test, there is always risks as well as benefits. So I just, with, you know, Rebecca and I can't suggest or recommend any DNA tests. That's really not what we do at the library. But what we could say is that, you know, it's always worth doing your research and looking into anything before you do any sort of DNA testing.
Yeah.
Okay. And then,
sorry, go ahead, Susan.
I'm sorry about that. I read that when DNA from families is used to solve cold cases, they aren't pulling DNA from 23andMe or Ancestry, and I'm wondering what companies they do get DNA from, and then thinking, in a way, are we kind of limiting the opportunities for people we're genetically related to get away with a crime if we put our DNA out there?
I have no idea who the authorities use, and I don't think Jill or Rebecca know either.
I think, I think the practices around this have been evolving very rapidly over the last few years. It's a fairly new method for, investigators to use. So I couldn't speak to the specifics, but it is, again, like Jill said, it's one of the considerations when you take a DNA test. I think some of the companies have come out pretty strongly to say that they will not share their data. Again, you'd want to do research into the individual companies. But it is something to consider that you are putting this information out on the internet with different companies. And so to just really think about the consequences, whether it's finding out that medical information that you may or may not want to know, uncovering a family secret. There's a lot of really amazing things that DNA can do, but you also want to be careful and think through your options when you're considering whether or not to take a DNA test.
Mm-hmm. Susan, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Brad in Madison emailed to say they've heard that the Mormons are experts in genealogy. Are their records readily available to the public? And I believe they indeed are.
Yes, I'm so glad that this came up. So FamilySearch.org is another one of those major genealogy websites that you can look for a lot of the same records you'll find on Ancestry and Fold3 and some of these other databases. And that is something you can sign up for free for an account. And libraries like ours, like the Wisconsin Historical Society Library, are often what you call affiliate libraries. So you can see a certain number of records from home, and then there are more records you can see when you're using our computers in our building. So it's another reason why you may want to come in to our library, you know, to your local public library. You can check to see, but they give you access to an additional like layer of records. But that's another great website to start your genealogy research on.
Yeah, absolutely. And wanted to turn for a minute at least to the new History Center. The Wisconsin Historical Society plans to build a new Wisconsin History Center on the Capitol Square in Madison. It looks fantastic. Tell us a little about it. Jill, do you want to start?
Sure. Yeah. So in a few years' time, we're going to have a brand new History Center that's going to be on the square in the same location as the one that we've had there before, but it's going to have a larger footprint. It's actually going to be expanded. And so this new History Center, it's going to double the exhibition space. It's going to have they're going to be breaking ground actually really soon. So this is just, it's really exciting, something to everyone should keep their eye on. And we did provide a link. We've got a video of what it's going to look like inside, so people can get an idea of what those gallery spaces will look like. And it's going to be telling the Wisconsin story in a new and engaging way. So we encourage everyone to keep their eyes and ears open for news about that new History Center. We're all very excited about it. And in the meantime, we have a makerspace that's still open that people can come and do events. And we have, you know, our historic sites around the state. So there's still many ways that people can engage with the Wisconsin Historical Society, not just our library and archives, but our sites as well. Well,
that video of the what's there, I mean, it, the new building is absolutely fantastic. I told Joel Patton, our producer, to put the link up on our page for today's show. So
great.
WPR.org/Larry, go to today's date, and within the notes section, you'll get a link to the video, and I was just really pleasantly surprised to see everything that's going into it.
Yeah.
And it's going to really be state of the art.
Everyone's putting in a lot of work, but it's going to be well worth the wait.
Yeah. What's the most common question you get when you is sitting by next to the phone, or somebody comes in, Rebecca?
Really, the most common question is, how do I get started? You know, maybe they say, I'm interested in learning about my great-grandfather, or I'm interested in, you know, learning about my family, but how do I get started is really the most common question. And, you know, it's really about, like Jill said earlier, collecting the information you already have, talking to relatives, and then when you're ready, you know, doing a search on our website, getting started with some of those basic genealogical records, and building that family tree.
Yeah. Do you ever keep track of how many calls and requests for information you get over the course of a year?
Yes.
How many do you get, Jill?
Oh, I don't know if we have the number in front of us, actually. We do keep track, though. I don't have those numbers in front. It's hundreds and hundreds. I mean, we get lots of calls, lots of visits, lots of emails. We're busy every day.
I was actually just looking at the numbers this
morning.
Oh,
were you? Okay, Rebecca's got it.
Well,
she's prepared.
All right, Rebecca, tell us.
Well, it was just fortunate. I'm doing some reporting for the year to kind of make plans for the new year, and we have several different systems that we count these numbers in, so it's hard to get one grand number. But I will say, just for people that call us or come in person, over the last few years, in the library specifically, we average at least 500 to 550 genealogy questions a year. And that's when it's like the main thing is genealogy, like the first thing. There's lots of thousands of questions we get every year that have genealogy built in. And then our email system, too, I would say at least in the hundreds of questions every single year. So lots and lots and lots.
Okay. Yeah. And so it gets into the thousands when you add it all up. Mm-hmm. Well, it's been a lot of fun talking with you both today. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for
having
us.
And we'll do it again.
Sounds great.
How's that sound?
Perfect.
All right.
We love it.
Rebecca Hoffman is the Genealogy Services Librarian at the Wisconsin Historical Society Library. Jill Fuller is a Reference Librarian and the Stacks Manager at the Wisconsin Historical Society Library. They've been on the job a short time, but they obviously know a whole lot about what the heck they're doing. And we'll have them back and do it again. Coming up, the weather guys will be with us. I'm Larry Mueller.